football on off the ball.
And if we do that, I believe this team will go down as one of the greatest teams.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Hope you're great, folks. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, bit of crack, and a reminder as well. The full Off the Ball Racing Pod is now free wherever you get your pods. Johnny Ward, how are you?
Good, JD.
I believe this is episode 100. I might be one or two out or one or two in, but nevertheless, a century knocking innings. You know the way in cricket, you hold up, you hold your bat to the... I'm holding my bat to you, Johnny, to thank you for 100 episodes of The Racing Pod.
The first time I ever heard of 100 not out was something to do with Ian Wright in Match magazine. So Ian Wright would have, whatever would that be, like 100 Arsenal goals maybe? And I didn't know the reference because obviously I wasn't from a cricket background. But
West Galway was not a cricket stronghold.
Nor East Galway, where I'm from. very different part of the world. But it's great to get this far. I'm delighted Off the Ball came back on to the racing show as well. I mentioned this as well because Tommy Lyons from The Examiner is he's going to finish up The Examiner this year. We've had major upheaval in the Reach groups in the last couple of days. It's a tough time for sports journalists. Particularly in print. And we're lucky to be in this position, JD, where we're able to talk about racing on a Friday, because I think at one point the Irish Independent Group alone had six racing journalists or six racing correspondents in some shape or form. Brian O'Connor is the last man standing. He's in the whole of Irish media, apart from the trade paper, the Racing Post.
The Irish Field as well.
And the Irish Field. So the Irish Field, Mark Costa are doing great work there. It's kind of left to the Irish Field, and the Irish Field is doing very well to prosper as well in this environment. The Irish Field and the Racing Post are the only ones left, and I don't think this is a healthy state of affairs. I really don't for journalism in terms of racing. Racing is a sport that needs to be probed. Like, it really does. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's upheaval at the IHRB today that has, with the security team, and this week that hasn't really been reported at all. There's an awful lot of stuff that Paul Kimmage looks into. Paul Kimmage has the time and resources in the Independent, Sunday Independent. Other journalists just don't. I think journalists who work in the racing game as well, they almost feel like that it's just not worth their while delving into stories because they'll annoy people and this and that. But ultimately, if there are no racing journalists there, it's not good for the game, because the IHRB needs to be held to account. Horse Racing Ireland needs to be held to account. The trainers and the jockeys need to be held to account. There's a lot of skullduggery in racing. There always has been. But we can't just be cheerleaders for the sport. We need to be able to look into it as well. And the decimation of the racing media is very, very worrying, I think.
Well, maybe in the next 100 episodes we'll do a bit more of that. Why don't we
People could point out, but I feel it's not easy for me, because like when I was in the Irish Independent looking at certain things, like I was only there for a year, but that was the best work I've ever done in journalism, because I really worked hard and I didn't really care about annoying people, and I certainly annoyed people, and I know that relationships were difficult to mend, whether they were worth mending in the first place after that, because people are trying to look after their own patch. But ultimately, I think people respected that, racing needs proper journalism. I was only a year in the Independent, and since then, it's fair to say I haven't taken the investigative stuff that seriously. There's no money in it whatsoever for me, and I'm on the TV every, couple of weeks or whatever.
And you're on the radio every week.
And on the radio. But it's hard to balance talking to people and then looking into like a potentially sort of dodgy race or stuff like that. But I do feel that it's worrying where this is going. Well, and I feel that on this show, I feel that we're fairly upfront about the issues. I don't think we shy away from them.
Well, I think also it's difficult to do everything, because that's why you have a trade paper, because you have... You'd like to think many journalists to do many things. So in the Racing Post, you'd have an Irish news reporter. You might have a features writer like Alistair Down, was amazing at it. Then you'd have a spotlight writer. You have people who do the breeding side of it. Like on this show, for example, in preparation for today's show, not saying we're great fellas or everything, I always do 50 horses a week. I will not go beyond 50 horses, because otherwise I think you're getting to the law of diminishing returns. But 50 horses have been profiled in the preparation for this week. obviously then you're researching the Dylan Brown McMonagle story because he's Irish flat champion jockey. What other stories do we have this week as well? So you're not only doing, to do the race previews takes, to do a card, I would say takes 4 hours. So you're not only doing a card.
That's about right.
And then you got to do maybe other investigative stuff, which might take weeks and weeks to do. And you do need the resources for that. And to have that to be done properly, you need a team. And like one journalist in Irish mainstream written press doing this as a dedicated job. Don't have time to be doing some half the stuff you'd like to do.
And you even see in the Racing Post, Brian Fleming and Justin O'Hanlon would have somewhat quietly left in sort of the last year or so as well. And, you know, the Racing Post is obviously feeling the squeeze of the general move away from newspapers. The Racing Post is now a subscription service online. And it's not so much, it will be sad when newspapers go out of print, but that's the way the media work. It works. It evolves and all of that. But we need journalists in some shape or form. And it's just unfortunate that, like the Tommy Lyons, obviously, Tommy Lyons worked very, very hard in the Examiner. And Niall Cronin, who's now in the IHRB, when he would have been in the Evening Herald, I was in the Independent at the time, and I know how hard Niall had to work. Like, it was becoming a tough job, actually. Like, and maybe journalists had it quite easy back in the day. You know, I have this romantic notion, and Philip Quinlan used to tell me about, you know, the first days he had in the Irish Independent, where like it was kind of romantic in a way. Like, they might go for a pint at lunch and they'd come back and they'd file a story or two, and it wasn't anywhere near as kind of pressurised work wise as it is now, when papers were thriving in Ireland, like up until not that long ago. But it is worrying, JD, and like I don't know about you, but I still love the newspaper with the race cards on it. Like, I still like, see, if the Irish Times
would be fair to the Star, does he got Brian Flanagan in, yeah, the Star, and they do good supplements and racing, especially on Saturdays. So
yeah,
I did, like, have guest writers, Davy Russell, and that.
Like, absolutely. Then, like, I suppose with respect, there's not any real investigative journalism done like there should be anymore. And that's a product of a few things. But I do believe with the Trump administration, for example, and I think Steve Bannon sort of propagated this theory, if you put a load of bad news out in the press, you can only take in so much at the one time. And I think like the general news media is a bit like that now, where it's hard for the media to keep up. And it's hard, as somebody who's actually worried about the state of the world, to even keep up with it. And it's hard for journalists to kind of survive. And that's at that level. But in racing, as much as it's obviously not that important, this is worrying.
Well, it's just, you need a team to do it. You're going to go and say cover racing for the week, say Cheltenham week, you got to cover the stories. It could be that, like, the Grand National, Patrick Mullins won the Grand National this year for his father, right? And Nick Rocket. That in itself is maybe a week-long story. You'd be covering the race itself. You'd be covering the reaction to it. You'd be going down to Lena Bridge in County Cardo for the homecoming. That's just a racing reporter would do that. Where's the time to do the investigative stuff?
Yeah. I suppose as well, and I have a very, very much love-hate relationship with social media, but it does give everyone the opportunity to broadcast media about a racehorse or about his or her job.
Well, that's why, because the racing TV stuff, some of the stuff sometimes goes viral.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great for the sport, but it's generally feel-good stuff.
Yeah.
It's nice stuff. It's quirky stuff.
Who's going to pay for the investigative stuff? That's the problem. And that's where journalism is at in so many ways. People have pretty much stopped buying newspapers, and that's understandable because of, you know, internet addiction at this stage, which is what I would call it. And papers are out of, you know, they're a misnomer now calling them a newspaper, because it's not even news anymore. But if people aren't going to pay for investigative journalism, nobody will do it. It's just not worth their while. And racing is a sport that needs to be probed, because, you know, there is, it's just by its very nature, there are a lot of stories out there.
When you're,
and unfortunately, JD, there are a lot of stories that we will never know because they're not being reported.
And when you're involving money. The one good feel-good story this year, Dylan Brown McMonagle, I mean, Kevin Blake, who works with Joseph O'Brien, who is Dylan's trainer, in, so to speak, put up on social media the video about Dylan Brown McMonagle when he was 12. I think it was 5 Stone of Lead, it was called, directed by Johnny Madderson. And what was the line from Dylan as a 12-year-old? The dream is to be champion jockey. That's it. And he is 22, 10 years later.
But
for any boy or girl, the fact that you could have that dream and then to be realised.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen this video up until this week, and when Kevin Blake put it up on Instagram, I popped in on it, which is telling enough, you know, I was on Instagram, whatever, and popped into the little video. It's such a beautiful piece of work. Like, it's just like, and it obviously, you know, shows the pony racing at its best, and it's been difficult for years for pony racing since, but like that beautiful thing of, young jockeys on the beach and Dylan Brown giving his interviews. What's striking as well is the 12-year-old Dylan Brown McMonagall and the 22-year-old Dylan Brown McMonagall. Not a massive difference. Like, he talks in a very similar, polite manner. He's just a really likeable kid, blessed with good looks, you know, blessed with talent, blessed with the whole lot, and blessed with a positive attitude. And to be champion jockey at that age, for all that it's obviously to do with Colin Keelan's different kind of year this year, is a fantastic achievement. And he's a great ambassador for the sport.
95 winners. So we had Al Riffa, probably his biggest win of the year in the St. Ledger at the Curragh. And then you like Trust Your Instinct, Prince's Child, Joseph O'Brien. Like, the big future for Dylan Brown. McMonagall.
Big future.
And I mean, also Donegal. What's the story of Donegal, Letterkenny? I mean, like, yeah. I would never think Donegal is a horse racing area.
Yeah, I was up in that neck of the woods in Donegal this year, and where we were staying in Rathmullen, that's beside Remelton, and that sort of area around the coast, there's a lot of horses. They go on the beach, and there's a lot of big pony racing kind of history up there. So you'd have the likes of Oisin Orr and Dylan Brown McMonagall and plenty of other good riders, Luke McAteer from that neck of the woods. And pony racing is, I actually did a piece with Gavin Cromwell lately about, like, two of his sons are pony riding. And as a father, you're obviously worried about it, but it's a brilliant, brilliant education for a young jockey. Like, and when Jack Kennedy had his first ride as a 16-year-old, coming from that background, Jack does a video of Jack as well when he was very young. You're practically half a jockey as it is, because it's tied to really teach you how to race. And as much as Donegal is a racing backwater in that regard, it's not in terms of pony racing. And I feel one thing that should be mentioned here, we're all a product of our upbringing, and the parents, the work they have to do to bring the kids to the pony races all over the country, like, they make the kids really.
Really sad story as well this week. 19-year-old Tommy Jakes, a young rider on the flat in the UK, an apprentice, tragically died. It's just incredibly sad. He rode 59 winners. It was tough to read that now.
Yeah, horrific. I was actually writing a story yesterday about Redwood Queen, that there's a referral thing on next month, and I was very keen on Racing TV to get the story out. And right at that time, this broke at the same time, and it just puts this weird context. It's like, you know, this is a story about a race in Wexford, a claiming race, and all of a sudden this breaks. And I was just, I mean, I didn't know much about the rider, but like, the devastation that his family are going through now. And you know, I think that the weighing room is a tough place, and unfortunately a lot of people are struggling. But you know, you need to, if you are a young person and you're affected by this, you know, you need to talk to somebody, really talk to somebody, because Tommy has passed now, and you know, his parents, this is just something you never recover from. How will they deal with this going forward? And those, what really, I don't know anything about the kid, John, but just from reading it this morning, was by every account I've read, and this is sadly often the case, there was no sign of this whatever. Maybe, I don't know the whole story, but there was no sign of this, and that's what's really shocking. And it's devastating. It's when something like this happens to somebody, and whether I've met him or her ever, it always really, really affects me. And this was the same thing. It's horrible to read a story like this. And I can only imagine the horror his parents are going through.
The Samaritans can be contacted at 116123, or you can visit samaritans.org. And there's more references on the Racing Post as well to that really, really desperately sad story about Tommy Jakes. And even John Hunt giving the news as well yesterday was tough to watch.
We had Mark Enright on this show in an earlier version of it, talking about his own kind of struggles with mental health and the role that Mark Walsh played in kind of helping him at a tough time. And Mark's a great example of coming out the other side and you know, making a great career, won the Galway Plate and all of that. And you know, I would make this point time and time again, humans are totally imperfect. We all go through real struggle, like we all go through struggle, and talk to somebody.
May Tommy Jakes rest in peace. So we have the Breeders' Cup this weekend. Del Mar again in California, second year in a row there, Johnny. So I suppose the Irish interest is, having been to the Breeders' Cup, if you're going to watch it tomorrow night, folks, on television, it's pretty simple for me. The dirt races are generally won by the Americans, and the turf races are won by the Europeans. And if you have a European win a dirt race, it's a really big achievement. But I generally find like it's almost like you have the Derby, which is the Breeders' Cup turf, is the equivalent of the Derby. And then you have a mile race, and then you have the fillies and mares races, and then you got a sprint as well on turf. And this is all fast ground at Del Mar in California. And then the Breeders' Club Classic, which is the richest race on the card, is the big dirt race over 10 furlongs. So that's how you kind of, I suppose, weigh it up before you get involved in looking at it.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, there's never been an Irish winner of the turf sprint. Maybe there will this year. But one thing that intrigues me is, like, why are we so worked up about watering in these parts if all of these connections are happy to go over to run horses on firm ground? The best horses they have, they run them on firm ground. And if there were firm ground at the Curra on Irish Derby Day, the place would be up in arms. So I don't quite understand that. Why are connections absolutely happy to go to Del Mar to race the best horses and the most expensive horses they have on firm ground? And there would be uproar if there were firm ground over here. And like, it's a big issue for racing staff in this country at the racetrack to ensure safe ground. But I've had a lot of trainers come up to me that feel ground, particularly jumps ground, is constantly overwatered in the summer.
Well, jumps ground, jumps racing, you can understand from a safety point of view.
Yeah, jumps racing,
but flat racing.
Flat trainers as well. Sorry, flat trainers very much. I can't quite understand why is there no issue with firm ground for all of these runners coming over from Ireland and Britain, some of whom clearly go well on soft ground. But that's a moot point. The Breeders' Cup is a great bit of fun because you know you've all the racing from basically Down Royal tomorrow and then easing into the start, 7 o'clock for the Filly and Mare Sprint. Last race tonight, Friday night, is 12:25 a.m, so Saturday morning. So, and that kind of patriotic element to it is
get
cool
at that
well.
Popcorn.
And you've been, of course.
I've been to Keeneland, where it is next year. So 2022 is on Keeneland, which is like the Augusta almost of horse racing, I've described it, because it's the biggest, bloodstock breeding. It's like the Curra on another level. And I would call it a real kind of South Fork, you know, kind of Great Gatsby vibe to the place, Keeneland and Kentucky.
Well, I tell you what, you know, these are trying times for journalism and all that, not the racehorse. But maybe you should write like a Hunter S. Thompson type article and go over and do it next year with that in mind. Yes, with me there, Richard.
Yeah. Well, the Keeneland Breeze is the best drink I've ever had in my life, I think.
What's in it?
It is bourbon, orange liqueur, orange juice and ginger ale. And you go to Cape Canaveral on it.
Wow.
After about two of them. Now, obviously, you should be doing it responsibly.
Yeah.
It's just great. The Breeders' Cup, folks, just once in your life, I saved up to go and I had an amazing time.
Yeah.
I love the fact that there's about 10 races a day. I love that.
It's a proper day.
It is proper. And I've never seen, I saw a lot of private jets and I saw a lot of new money, but I've never smelt in the air the old money that I smelt.
Old American money.
In Kentucky and Keeneland with just the way that people carry themselves, the dress sense, the massive cigars, just that sense of, and they had this big sign with how many kilometres to Ireland or the UK and everything. And
you're right at home.
And Ryan O'Moore was, and Aidan O'Brien had three winners, I think. I think Tuesday won when I was there.
Yeah, the one thing about it as well is the tracks are so tight that it's a real sporting event. Like going to race meetings where you've all of these odds on favourites who just basically will win, that's not exciting. Whereas in the Breeders' Cup, you've like Christophe Soumillon going over this weekend. How he's going to...
If you're over there, there's value in the European horses.
That's
on the
thing,
tote.
Yeah. It's like in...
As opposed to a betting market back
here. If the Japanese horse are running in the arc and there are Japanese people over. And with the Whirlpool, like the tote is basically really struggling in these parts. But the Whirlpool... Like that, it's you can get a bit of value on it, and I'd love to go.
It's big because you see NBC, Nick looks over there, and you're working for NBC, I think. You see NBC, you see like the big American broadcaster, and then you hear that bell go. You know that bell go, and then that sound of the stalls opening, and then the track commentator, you know that. It's just, so I went down and watched them on the dirt. Like, I mean, the way the sand or whatever, the surface just comes up, like flies up into the air, And the people there would have reams and reams and reams of form study done, like pages and pages. And then, like, and it's America, so there is a service culture. So this, like, bread and butter pudding or whatever you want, hot dogs, whatever you want. It is, look, it's going to burn a hole in your pocket, but it's worth it. And also, if you're going to somewhere like Keeneland or Del Mar, you're kind of a bit off the beaten track. You're seeing real America. You're getting an observation into real... I suppose inner sanctum of the country, and you're going to get a different vibe than you would say New York or Los Angeles.
I think we forget as well, like, America is the United States. It's a bit like the EU in many ways. Like, these are states that are very, very different to each other in some respects, and we see it as one thing. It's like people think of India as one thing when it's simply not.
Kentucky,
America's
yeah.
like that. Totally.
Kentucky was, everybody had detached houses, but they were all kind of like bungalows, and they all had flags and massive cars, pickup trucks, massive cars. There's a few things that matter in America. Money is the driver of everything in America, from being there now three times in the last 3 years. The second thing is cars. Money and cars, that is their thing, and service. They're the three things. So your breakfast could cost you $50, but, you know, you get everything you want. You want it a certain way, whatever. Everything is about
except
the dollar.
Free range, I'd say.
Everything is about the dollar and the way the dollar moves.
Yeah.
And that can be quite cold.
Yeah.
But it is a fascinating place. It's a fascinating place.
See, we're on a slight tangent here, but, like, I mean, I used to look up to America so much, and that's changed a lot now. But at the same time, like, if you go to New York, it's one of the friendliest cities you'll ever go to. It's incredible. Like, it's...
Well, sometimes you need to separate the politics from the just don't talk about Trump.
Yeah, yeah, that's the way it is. But you know, whether you're a Trump fan or like, not, I mean, a winner.
The being at the Masters last year, the friendliness of the people was off the scale, off the scale.
And people should not forget that when American tourists come over here, basically propping up the economy and the likes of Kerry
nice
and all of that, be nice to them because they're nice to you. They are very nice people. By
will America. Arizona Blaze win this turf sprint then 7:41 p.m. Irish time Saturday and.
It's a race that's hazardous in terms of betting because so many of these horses would like to make the run. And to have Adrian Murray, Midlands trainer, having two runners here for Amo Racing.
Great
stuff. Buccaneer Fuerte goes from gate 11, Arizona Blaze from 3, and David Egan going from gate 3 on the horse who won the only Group 1 of the year at the Curragh. That'll probably help. Now, I suppose the only thing is, if you're really, really gunning to get on the lead here... that could be problematic. So you look at someone like Matorius, the top horse, who's a 7-year-old, basically warmed up for this with a last to first somewhat lucky win last time in a grade 3. I'd say his rider, Antonio Fresu, might be able to just sit back here from gate 1. I don't think he's going to go gunning forward even from that gate because that's the way he's ridden. I think there's going to be a lot of pace here. But it's a tricky race. And I say, Ireland, this race is only going since 2008. Ireland has never won it. Jack Davison and Colin Keane teaming up with She's Quality. Like, it's magic to have. Like, She's Quality is a very good sprinter, but she doesn't win these races. And to have, she doesn't win, and maybe she'll win this, but to have a runner like that is magic stuff.
The firm ground will be definitely, it'll bring maybe some career performances out of horses in a good way, as opposed to maybe a challenging way.
If you can get on a sprinter, like, just, like, you know, like Soul Power and Slade Power, a lot of these horses don't cost that much. She's Quality did, but if you can fall on a sprinter, you've so much fun around the world going to these races, and, like, the sprinting division is not particularly strong at the moment.
So the next race we're going to look at the Breeders' Cup is the Breeders' Cup Turf, 1 mile, 4 furlongs, 9:41 p.m. Irish time, 14 runners. This is all about Minnie Hawk, really. At 3 years of age now, she gets the weight of lens. She's won all the major Oaks races this year, then beaten ahead in the Ark by Darius. The ground will suit her. She likes fast ground. If she's travel well, she's got every chance. You just never know with the trip and everything, as in the trip over to the USA, but favourite's chance for Minnie Hawk. Do you like her?
Yeah, I do like her, yeah. I find her very, very difficult to oppose. And if you're listening to me before the arc, ground can really frustrate you. Like, I was put off the ground because it was very soft officially at Longchamp, which apparently she didn't want, but she still all but won the arc. They were so far clear of third. It wasn't a brilliant renewal of the arc, but, like, that was a hell of a performance. And I like the fact that she's running here, not going for the fillies and mares. Maybe Aidan will win that anyway, but certainly she'd have been a shorter price here. But even as a filly going for this race, I'm sure it's very, very rare. Like, she's going to go off something like even money. Interesting to see what price she is on the tote. But she's gate ace. Christophe Soumillon rode her at Longchamp, got to know her. She might have Rebel's Romance to beat here. Rebel's Romance is... very, very solid. He actually ran...
Won the race last year, Rebel's Romance.
Won the race last year in a brilliant renewal and ran in Belmont at the Big A the last time, which is Aqueduct, which is the track nearest to John F. Kennedy and very near my cousins in the States. So I've been to Aqueduct. Aqueduct, as Belmont has been redeveloped, took on a bit of Belmont and Rebel's Romance won there. A bit of a globe-trotting horse. Big danger to the selection, and this is the race. These are the races I love about the Breeders' Cup. It's 9:41 on the Saturday night. I'm sure you're having a good time. Rebel's Romance goes from 1. Is he going to try and take dead aim at Minnie Hawk like was the case in the arc when Christophe was done in the closing stages? I feel how Christophe Soumillon negotiates this will be interesting because he won't want to be the proverbial sitting duck.
I like Goliath at an each way price of about 8-1, drawn to Michael Barcelona, full of confidence, won the Arc, won the Champions Stakes. The horse won the King George and Fast Ground at a price last year. I think he'll receive a strong pace. I think he's got an each way chance, Goliath.
Yeah, it could be could be third favourite actually on the day, and Michael Barcelona in great form, and he goes just beside Rebel's Romance from gate two. So
Woody Wooden's got a runner in this. Ethical Diamond, don't fancy it personally, but once again, great to see him have a runner.
It's mad stuff that Ethical Diamond was bought I saw Ethical Diamond win a maiden at Limerick for, was it Mick O'Mara? That was in June 2023, and I think he was bought for quite decent money. And it's funny how horses work out. First race, Leopardstown, maiden hurdle, beaten 33 lengths, 50-1, sixth in a Leopardstown Grade One, ran in the Triumph, tailed off, beaten 51 lengths. On his return in Leopardstown, beaten again. Next run, beaten again. Next run, ran in Leopardstown, beaten 43 lengths, right? That was the start of his career for William Mullins. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six races, one of which he was placed in. Look what he's done since. Like, the win, and I find him a hard horse to get a handle on.
I just think you need to forget about the jumps for him. And obviously, yeah, not a jumps horse. Like, a Rite of Passage, couldn't win a Cheltenham, won an Ascot Gold Cup.
Yeah.
So I just think
he's still a solid. Like, he was fourth. Paddy Mullins rode him in the county, and he was fourth, wasn't a bad run at all.
But I think you're right. Forget about his jumps form.
He beat Ascending. That form has backed up since at York, and it's mad because the prize money's so good here. Like, it's worth a shot.
It is worth a shot. The Breeders' Cup Mile at 11:05 p.m. tomorrow night. Wonder how people will be by that stage. But
what's that drink you were talking about?
The Keeneland Breeze.
Keeneland Breeze. Yeah, keep a bit like me and Negronis. Don't go too hard on the Keeneland Breeze.
Responsibly. Now, the Lion in Winter. I think this horse is coming to himself. He was an exciting two-year-old. I think he's very interesting here in this mile for Aidan O'Brien. Second in the Queen Elizabeth II Stakes at Ascot on Champions Day. I think it's a good each-way bet, the Lion in Winter. Do you agree?
I don't know. He's had a funny year where he looked all over a Derby horse on his two-year-old form, even though he'd good, very good 7-furlong two-year-old form. The season was sort of derailing for him. Got back on track at Longchamp. That Ascot race the last time was 100-1 winner, 22-1 third Alakazi. Notable for Rosalian was disappointing for me. Field of Goal, you'd have to say it was disappointing. So is he such that he's good enough to beat these very good horses? Never So Brave, another solid horse in behind. I'm just sort of not entirely sure what to make of that form the last day. But he looked quite straightforward under pressure. He stayed on well. Yeah, he'd have an each-way chance. I think Notable Speech overall is probably the most likely winner. He was third this time last year at Del Mar. That was another dramatic race. Never runs a bad race. Warmed up for this when winning the Woodbine Mile. Now, this is a tougher race, but looks the most solid to me, albeit priced accordingly.
Salan is progressive, must hold claims, won the Prix du Moulin at Longchamp in September.
Not sure about the ground for him, but
yeah.
You know, it's one of these other, like, it's just the firm ground is a bit of a quandary.
Johannes was second in the race last year, won last time out. Gas Me Up has formed to find with Notable Speech. I thought, though, this horse is lightly raced and there are worse outsiders at a massive price. Frankie Dettori rides a Japanese horse, Arjean. I think he's got a bit to do in the form book, though. That's the mile.
Yeah, Gas Me Up is interesting as well because, as you say, he's 3.5 lengths fine with him the last day, but he's a progressive horse going in there.
He's about 50-1 now, that horse.
Yeah, he is 50-1. Don't be afraid of these races are very, very messy as well. Like, things can go wrong. I mean, I'm absolutely not going to bluff here and say I know about American form, but you'll get American horses who are the jockeys and the horses know the kind of terrain. They know what to do here. And that horse, like, he was 15-2 at Woodbine, so he would have a chance getting involved.
The Breeders' Cup filly and mare turf is in the early hours of Sunday morning, 12:25 a.m. Just looking at this, once again, you've Atsila, unproven over the trip, but Dunnock O'Brien's horse, isn't it?
Yes.
And then Cinderella's Dream, beaten half a length into second in the race last year. Bit of money, though, for the same colours. Diamond Rain, as we record this, she ran well in Canada back in August. But William Buick has gone for Cinderella's Dream. She Feels Pretty has won 3 of her 4 starts this year.
Yeah, it's a massive Irish and English assault on this race, really, with Dunnock O'Brien, Charlie Appleby, Kevin Philpott-Tafoy has a runner as well, Aidan O'Brien, Andrew Balding would Set the Fire. I'm going to give Bedtime Story one more chance.
Again?
One more chance. She did run very well behind Kalpana in Ascot. She did run very well, and I I think she's capable of getting involved. Like, in fairness, she's probably been a small bit disappointing. But that was a good run. She looks like a mile and a half on sort of fastish ground will be pretty much ideal for her. And William Hill price here, she is 14-1, which is the top price going. And we'll come with that late run. It's not a great renewal of the race, I think.
So the Breeders' Cup, what are you looking forward most to seeing? Mini Hawk?
Mini Hawk, yeah. I think it's unusual to... My first recollection of the Breeders' Cup, I was just getting into racing at the time, was I had about 30 euro. Was it even euro?
Did we do the Classic?
30 euro. We haven't done the Classic yet, yeah, sorry. I backed Rock of Gibraltar, the only day he was ever beaten, essentially, in the Breeders' Cup, when Landseer, his stablemate, broke down in front of him. He was beaten by, was it Dome Driver? But I remember that was the Falbrav. That was the High Chaparral Johar Dead Heat, and it was an amazing night at that night. But to have a hot pot at Aidan O'Brien Trains, I love that. Mini Hawk, I'm looking forward to most.
Breeders' Cup Classic, 1 mile, 2 furlongs, 10:25 Irish time, Saturday night, 9 runners. Sierra Leone, I suppose, holds the key to the race because won the race last year in the Ballydoyle Colours after a close second in the Kentucky Derby. Seems a good nick to defend his crown, but his form has tied him with so many of these. Did you pick one out of it?
Sierra Leone's run the last day at Saratoga has to be seen to be believed, really. He was sent off 23-20. He was 18 lengths behind the leader after essentially a horse lost the rider beforehand, so he was way, way back off the pace. The likes of Journalism here for me is he never seems to run a bad race. He's basically danced all the dances in the good races this year, including the Belmont Stakes when he was second to Sovereignty. And he's going to be 8th run under José Ortiz. For me, he's just a horse that for a fiver each way type of bet, you'll have plenty of fun backing him in this race. Well, he was maybe a small bit disappointing behind Fierceness last time, trained by Todd Pletcher, but this would have been the aim from the late season aim. I wouldn't mind having a fiver each way on him.
Fierceness second in the race last year. The one I picked out was Mindframe. Won a group one at Churchill Downs this year and beat Sierra Leone. And also had Sierra Leone's measure in the Belmont Stakes last year. Unseated last time. Forget about that. Mindframe, about 7-1 each way, I think.
And I should mention as well...
Baez is one to look at as well.
Sierra Leone is bidding to emulate his dad, Gunrunner, who won this in 2017.
Okay, let's bring in Alex Dunn from William Hill. How are you, Alex?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Looking forward to a fantastic weekend of racing. Well, wherever you look, really. There's something for everyone, isn't there?
What are you seeing money-wise for the Breeders' Cup? Anything that's been attracting attention all week?
Yeah, the usual suspects, really. Obviously, we're going to take money or more money on the UK and Irish runners, you would imagine, than the American runners. Arizona Blaze has been supported now 5-1 for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. That's the 7:41 on Saturday night. There's also been a bit of money around for Notable Speech. That's coming up at 11:05, one of the later races, isn't it? The Breeders' Cup Mile. 2-1 at the head of affairs currently for Notable Speech. I heard you mentioning that race there. I think that's a lot more open than the betting would have you think there. I think 2-1 on Notable Speech is indicative of there being cash for the horse, but I think there's others that I'd probably rather side with. The really, the best race for me and the one I'm most looking forward to is the Breeders' Cup Turf. And Rebel's Romance has been popular at 100-30. I get what you're saying about Mini Hawk, but I don't think this is a two-horse race by any means. I think it's a really good contest. And Rebel's Romance, he may as well be trained in America. He's the perfect globetrotter, isn't he? I just think his temperament and his draw massively... I think he's overpriced at 100-30. Mini Hawk has still got a little bit to prove in that sense at 11-10. If she does win, goodness me, she is a superstar.
Yeah, there's probably not a great deal between them on form, but I suppose Mini Hawk has would Notable Speech have finished 5 length clear of third in the arc. But Alex, I have to ask you, right, as working for a bookmaker for the Breeders' Cup, so JD and I, of occasion, have been to a particular tavern or otherwise, and you're apt to have a bet, and it's a racing pub, loads of people like to have a bet. The Breeders' Cup is on a Saturday night. A large proportion of the people have a few bevvies in. Is the staking different to would be like a 2 o'clock on a Wednesday?
It is purely because it is better racing, and you will get racing fans who will tune in to watch it where they're watching it. I don't know. We don't have the data for that, unfortunately. But yeah, I know what you mean, and it is one of those things. I would like nothing more than to be doing that tomorrow night. Sadly, I will be covering it on William Hill's Betting TV all the way through until 2 a.m.
So don't say sadly at all, Alex. You're lucky to have a job in the great game.
No, that is true. It is one of those nights where you just go, this is so good, because it's just chock full of quality. And that comes off the back of a really good Saturday domestically as well. So you've got a bit of everything in there. And what I like about the Breeders' Cup is that, yes, you've got your European interest and you get to see these horses that you know loads about, but you also to your once a year American racing fan, there are plenty of runners that you might not know about that you can do the research on and try and find the answers to. There are a lot of races in there that might not on the face of it appeal to you, to a European punter, but I was looking the other day, Seismic Beauty is 7-4 for the distaff at 901 on form. She has got to have a fantastic chance. And you're talking about some short price favourites that are here, there and everywhere. She appears to be really, really solid in that race. But that's the thing. You can go race by race. You can take some at big prices. You can see how the track's riding as well. Is there a front runner's bias? Because they do tend to go off pretty hard. I just think it's a fantastic meeting.
The Down Royal Champion Chase, Grade 1 over Jumps. Johnny, we're back in that picture now. 3 miles, 240 on Saturday. Are we going to go with our old friend Aphrodite Fury again? I am.
He's not without a chance. It's a shame we've 7 runners. Abe would have made it very interesting, but it's good. It's a decent turnout. Aphrodite Fury is going to have a big help in terms of stepping up to 3 miles here. He has to reverse form with Western Fold. Western Fold looks like he probably will have his ground again. I don't know how much rain they got up there. We've got plenty here today, but Western Fold would have a bit of a chance. Like, I kind of like Envoy Alain.
Again?
I put him up in the race last year. He did everything
11
right,
years of age.
He's 11. He's basically nearly 12 now, so he's 11 going on 12, but I mean, you look at Found a 50. Is he going to stay? Spillane's Tower.
First
run of the season.
Likes cutting the ground.
Ground
as well.
Issue. Maybe even a bit disappointed to be beaten 22 lengths by Galopin Deschamps last time, if that's as good as he is. He was beaten 17 lengths in the King George. So there are questions to answer there. Western Fold, this is just kind of almost afterthought territory because he was a summer horse, Galway Plate horse.
But he's up £23 in this spell.
But he's on that run at Goran, like, because it's a race in which you can sort of pick holes in them. He has a chance. I'd nearly go with Aphrodite Fury at the prices.
Yeah, 14-1 each way. I mean, like, what I'm looking at, when I'm trying to get looking at this race, I'm thinking, okay, Spillane's Tower might have targets later in the season. Envoy Alain, to me, surely there'd be something coming up to beat it, even though he's been a great servant, won it twice. Found a 50, this is a stamina question. Western Fold, is he going to get caught out at this grade? Stellar Story seems to want forever and deeper ground. That's what I'm looking at, 14-1 Aphrodite Fury. Alex, any money for anything in this one?
Found a 50 is the one that's been back through the week. I think punters were maybe aware of the fact that Jack Kennedy would be on board and has got shorter and shorter. He's now into 11-2 as we speak. So firmly third in the betting and will go off third favourite, I would imagine. But yeah, no surprise to some that Jack Kennedy got the leg up there. I'm just amazed when you look at this race. Envoy Alain is only 11. It feels like he's been around for so much longer than that. And he's got such a good record in the race. He's clinging on to favouritism, 7-4 currently. Spillane's Tower, 15-8 is, I hope that we see a huge performance from him, because he was, in my mind, he was going to be a big, big hitter. And then he just disappointed a few times. So hopefully he's back fit and firing. If they all turn up at their best, this will be a fantastic race. But I see your point about looking for one at a bit of a price, because there are question marks.
About the Charlie Hall Chase, another standing dish for this time of year. Grade 2, Weatherby, good ground, 3 miles, 257 on Saturday, 6 runners. To be honest, I'm looking at this, Johnny, I'm going, oh my God, all these horses are going around again. Like the Wheel Real Whacker, Protectorash, Hewick. I mean, come on, who's the new kid in the block? There's nobody new.
Well, I tell you what, that's why you never got a job with Sky Sports, not hyping up these races and Super Sunday and all of this, JD. Because, I mean, if this race were on Sky, you'd be just saying, ah, oh, sure, look at are these horses running around again. But we have, in fairness, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, 10-year-old, and they're going to be 10-year-old, 11-year-old, 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 10-year-old in a couple of months. But it's an interesting race at the same time. I mean, the fact that you've this race and the race at Down Royal on the same weekend means options for these horses, including Hewick, who could absolutely run in either. The ground's going to be quite similar. The Real Whacker won the race last year. I mean, he's 11-2. I'd nearly go with him because he ran a fine race over hurdles the last day. If he ran the race last year, that if he ran it again, he'd have a reasonable chance. I don't know, should he be as big relative to the likes of Protectorat in the race? Hewig is solid. He warmed off this with a good run, good win at Thurles. Gavin Sheehan back riding him, who was sort of somewhat controversially put on him in the international when Jordan Gainford had been riding him. Paddy Hannon rode him the time before at Thurles, and again, that's a long way of me saying I don't know what's going to win it, to be honest.
I have no idea. Alex, you tell us what's going to win it.
I think the Real Whacker might win it because for a lot of these horses, they have got another race lined up, be that in March, in April, or a little closer down the line. For the Real Whacker, this feels like the big one. Won it last year, 11-2, against horses that we don't know just how fit they're going to be and where they are in their seasons. Protectorat's 9-4, 3-1 Hewick, Picdori 4s, 9-2 Jello, the Real Whacker 11-2. I don't think she'll be fifth in. Galore is 12-1 on the outsider of the bunch. But I love Picdori. I think he's a fantastic horse at this level. I wouldn't be shocked if he were to win. But the Real Whacker, with that proven race fitness as well, as for me, got to be overpriced 11-2. The traders are really happy to be laying Protectorat and Picdori. That's their view at this stage. So it'd be really interesting to see how the market does shape up.
I wouldn't disagree. And it'd be a big boost to Patrick Neville, Paddy Neville, who was declared personally bankrupt at a court hearing that was in August. So this would be a massive, massive boost to win a race. It's been a tough year for him.
We got the Cork National. I'm just looking here on Sunday at the Lee Side Mallow track. So what, Balcotto is in there at favourite. Declan Queedy trains him. Paul Tennant rides Chosen Witness for Willie Mullins. Fortune to Fortunata. Jack Kennedy for Gordon Elliott. Just looking here at the Noble Birth, who's been in these types of races before for Gavin Cromwell. Just looking at this being declared now just as we speak. But yeah, History of Fashion even is direst there. So
yeah, 26 grand for the winner and 13 runners. Like, it's not, this race should be better than that. It's 132 the top weight.
Only though, one course winner, not, big debates, Robert Tyner.
Not 150 with a 132 top weight on maybe on good yielding ground. That's not right anyway. There's something not quite right with that. And I was there last year when it was won by Spagnum, who's kind of a low-rated horse. Great win for Shane Broderick. But definitely an interesting runner is Noble Birth, who will probably be kind of prepped for this race and has a bit of form around Cork for Keith Donohue.
Anything else catching your eye this weekend, Alex, for money?
No, not for money particularly yet. I'm just going to chuck one more in the mix because it'd be remiss of me not to mention. In the Breeders' Cup Turf, we mentioned Arizona Blaze has been popular. One of the American horses who I think could run a big race there is Bring the Band Home at 16-1. Is just a real speedster. We'll just try and go from the front and blow them all away. Might not get to the front, in which case you can rip your ticket up after 50 yards. But if he does get to the front, I think he's got a real chance at a big price.
Johnny Ward, your charity bet for this week in the Racing Pod. You've got €50 to spend, 25 each way or 50 on the nose. What is catching your eye?
I'm going to go 50 on the nose on Mini Hawk to win the Breeders' Cup Turf. I don't have the time here in front of me.
I believe it's 9:41 at Del Mar
9:41
on Saturday.
So, I don't see any negatives in her at all. I think she's an extraordinarily good horse.
Mini Hawk is Johnny's charity bet this week. The Great Filly won all the Oaks races this year, and then she was second in the Ark in this, the 9:41 race at Del Mar on Saturday in the Breeders' Cup. That is Johnny's charity bet for this week. Alex Dunn from William Hill, thank you so much.
Cheers, thank you.
Johnny, look, enjoy the Breeders'
Cheers,
Cup.
JD.
Enjoy your evening.
We'll be there next year, maybe.
Yes. That was the Racing Pod for this week. We'll chat next week, and we'll talk to you then.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.